Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. Glad to have you tuned in. I'm Neil Stavem. Today we're going to talk about the choices that we can make and whether or not we can actually choose joy. I don't know, Ted, are you, I have been described as a curmudgeon from time to time.
Yes, really?
Got a little bit of Eeyore once in a while,
Well, everybody has seasons, right? You have your ups and downs, and some people tend to dwell in one of those seasons a little longer than others, I think.
Okay, we'll go with that. So, but we can live a more joyful life starting today, and it seems appropriate any time to talk about joy, and we're going to highlight a wonderful new little book called Joy is a Choice You Can Make Every Day. And it is written by our guest today, Kay Warren, and we're just so honored to have her back with us on the Connecting Faith. Kay co-founded Saddleback Church with her husband, Pastor Rick Warren, and she's a passionate Bible teacher and an advocate for those living with HIV and AIDS, orphan and vulnerable children, as well as for those affected by mental illness. And she founded the Saddleback's HIV and AIDS Initiative. She has also worked a great deal on the mental illness issue as well. We'll find out a little bit more about that. She's authored a couple of books, including Choose Joy, Because Happiness Isn't Enough, and Say Yes to God. And I think, Joy is a Choice You Can Make Today is a a nice little book taken from, I think, Choose Joy. And so we're going to find out about it today. And we've got some copies of it to give away and love to have you join in the conversation with us as well and talk with Kay Warren. Kay, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
Thank you so much. It's nice to talk to you today.
Joy is a choice you can make today. It is. It's the material's mostly pulled from the Choose Joy book. Isn't that right?
So. Yeah, it's a 30-day devotional. I did 30-day video devotionals when I released the book in 2011, and we took those video devotionals and put them in a book form. So the Joy is a Choice You Can Make Today is 30 days worth of little vignettes, little inspirational nuggets to help us choose joy every single day.
And it'd probably take, for some of us, it'd probably take 30 days or so to kind of actually make that choice and start developing a habit, wouldn't it?
Well, and for some of us, more than others, that is true. Yeah. But yeah, they say it takes 3 weeks to start a new habit and 6 weeks to get it firmly in place. So this is a good way to get started.
Yeah, I like it. Well, so you have the conviction that joy is a choice, people that can choose joy. How do you arrive at that premise? Because someone might be skeptical at the moment.
Well, and I was too. I have to say, I really thought that joy was something that happened to me and that it was all about the externals. And when I began to study joy, I realized that that just isn't so, that joy actually has nothing to do with the externals. Everything that happens to us can be lost or changed or broken. The people that we care about can die or leave us. The position that we have at work can change or be given to somebody else. The possessions that we have can be, destroyed, or they get old or they break. Our personalities certainly aren't enough. And, before long, all the things that we've put our very fragile hopes for joy in can shift and change around us. And because it is such a fragile thing, joy is, it can't be in those externals because they can be lost. And it has to be in something or someone that doesn't change or shift, will never leave us, who will never forsake us, never change. And that leaves us with God. God is the only source of joy that cannot be taken, cannot change, cannot leave us, will not abandon us, and therefore I can choose. I can choose to trust in that unchangeable God, And when I do, then joy is something that occurs in my soul.
You actually have developed a definition of it. I guess there's probably several definitions, but I appreciated what you had to say about it. And at your definition, I think, has three parts. Just explain a little bit more about that.
Yeah, well, again, just keying off of this search that I had, because I had lived with a low level of depression for most of my life, so I'm really not one of those people that comes naturally to joy. It does not. I'm definitely a glass half empty kind of person. But yet when I read the Bible, there was this discrepancy between what I experienced of joy in my life, which wasn't a lot, and what it seemed that the Bible was teaching. So I was just determined to get to the bottom of this. How could I experience the joy that it seemed like I was supposed to be experiencing as a believer in Jesus Christ? And so I read this one definition that said something like, joy is when we are confident or assured that God is in control of the details of our lives. And I liked that, but I felt like it didn't maybe go quite far enough for me. And so the three parts that I came up with is that joy is the settled assurance that God is in control of all the details of my life. And the second part is joy is the quiet confidence that ultimately everything is going to be all right. And then the third part is it's a determined choice to praise God in all things. So it's a settled assurance about God. It's a quiet confidence in God and a determined choice to give my praise to God. So it has to do with my thoughts, my emotions, and my actions. And all of those are things that I can control. Therefore, I can choose.
You could just probably stop right there, have an offering and a song, and they call it, that was good. How is that different, Kay, from sort of the don't worry, be happy kind of approach?
Well, that's... There's nothing wrong with that because, happiness feels good. Happiness is good. Happiness has to do with, if I go to Disneyland tomorrow, I'm going to feel happy because there's a lot of fun things going on. And if you get a raise at work, that feels good. It feels happy. If you get good news from, you've gone to the doctor and you get a good report, or you fall in love, or, you have a new baby, or go out on a date. I mean, so many of those things are fun, and they're happy, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's just that they're not permanent. They change. They shift. As I said, a relationship can go in a second. Somebody that you love can die. A job can be lost. So if happiness is good, it's just not enough. It won't take us all the way. And It won't take you where you need to go on the dark days when things fall apart, when the rug gets pulled out from underneath you and everything, the ground around you shifts. Happiness just simply isn't enough to make it through. That's why joy is so much more important, so much more vital to our sense of well-being, and gives us what we need to face the good days and the bad days.
You said, Kay, that you were kind of a glass half empty sort of person, and many of us could maybe resonate with that. I was curious, if our parents are joyful, are we likely to share that trait? Is there some hereditary nature to joy?
Well, that's a really interesting question, and I haven't thought of that. I'm sure there are people who have done research on that. It makes sense, logically, it makes sense that if you grew up in a family where people were more naturally joyful or modeled it for you, that you would have a better grasp on it. It's logical. And I think then the reverse of that, it seems also logical, too, that if you grew up in a home where joy was not apparent and was not a very much a part of your life, that you would have a harder time with it because you didn't see it modeled, and you weren't the recipient of being around people who felt joyful. So I imagine that probably has a factor in it. But at the end of the day, it doesn't. Again, it's an external, and it can't be an excuse for us to say, well, I didn't see it modeled. I didn't live with a home that had a lot of joy. In fact, I lived with the reverse of that, and then somehow think that joy is outside of our reach. When we think that joy is outside of our reach, that can be a really bleak place to be. And to understand that the people in the Bible who represent joy to us, who teach us about joy, whose lives are examples of joy, many of them did not have good circumstances. They had a lot of pain. They had a lot of struggles. And yet they were able to choose joy. And I think that Jesus' life is probably such a great example of that. Jesus suffered greatly, and yet he was a man of joy. And that gives me hope. It gives me hope. It's like, okay, so my circumstances don't have to have been perfect. My life doesn't have to have been perfect. I don't have to have had, you know, the most amazing circumstances before I, too, can access a life of joy.
We're in the leading up to Easter, and you may be thinking about, you know, Jesus as the man of sorrows. But have you thought about Jesus as being full of joy and what difference that might make if you looked at your life and looked at the Gospels and saw who Jesus really is and how, you know, God is for us? We're going to talk more about joy and talk about maybe some of those joy robbers, joy killers, as we visit with Kay Warren. Kay has put together this wonderful little resource called Joy is a Choice You Can Make Today. Kay co-founded Saddleback Church with her husband, Rick, and she's the author of Choose Joy, Because Happiness Isn't Enough, and Say Yes to God. And we're going to talk a little bit more about her story and some of the difficult choices or times when she had to choose joy in the midst of hard times and experiences. We've got some copies of Joy is a Choice You Make Today to give away. We'd love to have you sign up for that. Wonderful little resource, and you can also join us with a question or comment, and you can do that by making a call at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH, or if it's more convenient to drop us a note online, you go to myfaithradio.com and click on the Connecting Faith show page. There's an email link there. You can send us your question that way or comment, and we'll continue more with Kay Warren in just a moment. Been there at times in the darkness and the shadows, and our first thought probably isn't to think and to sing, but when trouble comes our way, we're probably not thinking about joy. More than likely, you're feeling fear or panic or worry or anger, maybe even hopelessness. But there's a secret that can change your life. The level of joy you experience on any given day in any given situation, no matter how challenging it is totally up to you. And that's the premise of our conversation today with Kay Warren, co-founder of Saddleback Church with her husband, Rick, and author of several books, including Choose Joy, Because Happiness Isn't Enough. And Kay and Rick have three children, Amy and Josh, and Matthew is in heaven. And your experience losing your son was one of those really dark times for you, Kay. I guess if you were willing to just share a bit more about that, how you can choose joy even in the midst of, you know, evil and darkness, and you experienced some of the worst of it.
We did, and the third anniversary of his death is April 5th, so we're coming close to it. And of course, that every day it gets a little bit harder as you get. If you've lost somebody, you know those anniversaries can be very, very painful. Matthew lived with mental illness most of his life, and life was very dark for him and a struggle. And as his parents, those who loved him so deeply, we carried his pain with him. And so what was dark for him was dark for us. And it was one of the reasons I wrote Choose Joy initially, the first book that this little devotional book is taken from, was because I not only had I lived with depression myself, not only did I see this gap in my life between what seemed to be a promise in the scripture to experience joy, and there, but I didn't really. But I was also aware that his mental illness was getting worse, and that he struggled with suicidal thoughts. He attempted suicide multiple times, and I just had this impending doom inside of me that said, if something doesn't change, if there isn't a miracle, Matthew may eventually take his life, and I don't know what I will do if he does. And so it was one of the things that pushed me to really deepen my own spiritual walk with the Lord, to figure out what I could about joy, because I knew that up ahead of me might be catastrophic loss. And as it turned out, that is what happened. He took his life on April 5th, 2013. And after I had written the book initially, I looked for some jewelry that I could wear, because I'm not a tattoo person. And, you know, other people would probably get a tattoo of Choose Joy or something. And I'm not, that wasn't for me. But I thought maybe a piece of jewelry, something that I could look at, something that was tangible, that could be a reminder to me of what I'd been learning about how I could choose joy even in dark times. So I found a necklace that said Choose Joy. And on the day that Matthew died, I was pretty sure, just due to the circumstances that are private in nature, but I was pretty sure that he had taken his life, but I couldn't confirm it for a few hours. And so when I got up on the morning of April 5th, I went to my jewelry box and I picked that necklace, Choose Joy, out of the jewelry box, and I put it on. And, you know, looking back, I have to say it was sort of my feeble attempt to say, this is what I believe. This is what I believe, that even on the darkest days, God, I can access you. And if I access you, I can still experience joy, not emotion, not this happy, giddy emotion, because the darkest day of my life was in front of me, but that I could have that assurance that God was in control of the details of even this, that I was confident that ultimately everything was going to be all right, and that even if this day turned out the way I thought it was going to, I was going to praise God even on this day. And so as Rick and I stood in the driveway of Matthew's house waiting for the police to gain entry into his house, and we were pretty sure that we would find that he had indeed died. So we stood in the driveway, we were holding on to each other, and I kind of looked down and saw, you know, this is hours later, that I was wearing that necklace. And I held it up to him. I touched it and I held it up to him and didn't say anything. And we both looked at each other deeply in the eyes, began to cry even harder, but nodded our heads. And I've thought many times since, how could I do that on that day? How could he not push that away or push me away or just say, are you kidding me? You know, get that away from me. And all I can say to you is that for more than 50 years, we have sunk our roots deep into God's goodness, into his mercy and his grace, into believing that he is a God who will never leave us or abandon us, that he will be there for us, whether it turns out the way we want or it's completely different than the way that we want. And it was because of what we know about God and who he is that we were able to hold that necklace between us and say, yes, we will choose joy, even if the very worst thing that we could ever imagine comes true today. And so it did happen. Matthew had died, and we were able and have been able in these 3 years, nearly 3 years, to still affirm that God is good, that God will not leave us, that God is working out a plan that is far greater than anything I can imagine, that this is not the end of Matthew's story. It's not the end of our story. And because of those things that we know about God, yes, this world is broken. Yes, this world is a battlefield. Yes, there are terrible things that come into our lives. He can be trusted. And when I trust him, joy is a natural byproduct, and there is a sense of well-being that allows me to keep going, even in the face of the loss of my son.
Kate, talk about how hope and joy are related. They must be, right?
Intricately linked together. Because when there is the hope of, you mentioned, you know, that Easter is coming up and that Jesus was a man of sorrows, but he was also a man of joy. For me, Easter, to be honest, before Matthew died, I mean, I've been a Christian since I was 8 years old and I'm 62, so I've been a Christian the vast majority of my life. And Easter, in all honesty, before 2013, was all about the lunch. You know, it's Easter lunch and the Easter egg hunt and watching the grandkids, you know, the little grandkids look for the Easter eggs. And there was a spiritual meaning, but it didn't grab me the way Christmas did. You know, Christmas has got this whole month of beautiful songs and celebration and decorations and gift giving. There's so much connected with Christmas. And yet, if Jesus was born and lived and died, and that was the end of it for him, he would have been a nice man, a good man, who had some really amazing things to say, and he performed some miracles. He changed some people's lives. But it was his resurrection. It was his death and resurrection that takes him out of the category of a nice man, a good teacher, a moral human being. And it is his resurrection, because Jesus is alive. Matthew is alive, and that's why I know it's not the end of his story. And it means that someday when I die, that it won't be the end of me either. Jesus lives. Therefore, Matthew lives, and I know I will live. That gives me hope that I can hold on to. And when I believe that, when I know that, when I'm certain of that, again, it's certain of who God is, that joy comes with it. Joy and hope are linked very, very closely together. I suppose sometimes you could interchange them. And, you know, maybe we do. Can you tease it out? Is that being hopeful or is that being joyful? I think they go very closely together.
A joy is a settled conviction about God. It's a quiet confidence in God. And joy is a determined choice to give praise to God. We're talking about joy today. Joy is a choice you can make today. It's a new little devotional that Kay Warren's put together based on her wonderful book called Choose Joy, Because Happiness Isn't Enough. And we've got some copies of this devotional. We'd love to give you an opportunity to get one of those. We've got three copies or so, and we'll do a little drawing at the end of the hour. And you can sign up for that right now at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. And give us your contact information. We'll just put you in the drawing for that. It may be that you have a question or a comment, too. You've experienced some of life's dark moments and have found God faithful and joy in the midst of it. We'd love to have you join the conversation. You can do that with the calls. We talk more with Kay Warren. We're going to talk about, you know, can we know with confidence how our faith life will respond when trouble comes? I think we'd all long to be able to say, I'll respond in joy when the dark times come. Kay also talks about the railroad tracks, and we're going to review that a little bit as well in the moments ahead. And how can we really believe that Jesus was a man of joy? How can we learn more to maybe see the picture of Jesus in the gospel differently than what we remember from the Sunday school pictures, perhaps? More on that in just a moment with Kay Warren here on Connecting Faith. Is a choice you can make today. And I want to just encourage you, as I encourage me as well, that this is an opportunity for us to put our full confidence in who God is, and that that can make a difference. And we can live out joy today, no matter what we might be experiencing and what might come our way. We're talking with Kay Warren today. Kay has authored this new little devotional book, Joy is a Choice You Can Make Today. We got some copies to give away. She's written the longer release, Choose Joy, Because Happiness Isn't Enough, came out a few years ago. Also, Say Yes to God. She's also co-author of Foundations. It's a popular systematic theology course used by churches worldwide. She and her husband, Rick, co-founded Saddleback Church in Lake Forest, California, 25 years ago? More than
35.
That? 35. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
1980.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, thank you for joining with us today, Kay. You talk a little bit about, you give an illustration of railroad tracks, kind of analogy of that, because the reality is that while we can choose joy, you know, suffering and evil are seem like they're always present. So how do we deal with that paradox?
Yeah, I used to think that life came in hills and valleys, you know, or ups and downs. People always talk about, you know, ups and downs. There's an upside and there's downsides of life and the hills and the valleys. And I think, you know, maybe it comes that way, but I think it more often comes in what I call this parallel track, train track, set of train tracks. And so that every day of my life, there is something that is beautiful, that is a cause for joy. There's something every day that is joy, and that's one train track. And at the same exact moment, there's something that happens or that I could think of or that occurs every single day that's sad or that's sorrowful or shows how broken this world is or how broken my body is or my relationships. And so joy and sorrow run side by side throughout our lives every single day. And, you know, as human beings, of course, we want to lean toward the joy side and just try to make everything always happy and everything good and everything positive and try to stay off of that sorrow track. But it's impossible because this is Earth, not heaven. And this is a broken planet. And like I said, everything in life is broken. Every relationship has breaks in it. Some of them irreparably. Our bodies don't work perfectly. The weather doesn't work right. Politics sure doesn't work right. I mean, everything about our world is broken. And we can't escape it, no matter how hard we might try, how much we might want to deny it, say it doesn't exist. Evil and suffering is a part of our daily lives. But so is joy. And so for me, the trick, if you will, or the goal is to learn how to go down both of those tracks every single day, not be thrown off by the sorrow, not trying to avoid it, not just being a Pollyanna or somebody who thinks that everything is great if I'll just think positively enough. It's recognizing that both are true and that both can be experienced every single day. When my youngest grandsons were really small, they loved trains. And so I would take them down to, there's a train depot near us, kind of a rural train depot, and I can take them down there. And, you know, if they're not paying too much attention and it's completely safe, they love to get on those tracks. They love to just stand there on those tracks and you know, listen for the sound of a train coming, in which case we would scramble way behind the barriers and, you know, be very safe. But I noticed one day that as we were standing on the tracks, that if I looked off into the horizon, if I looked as far down the tracks as I could see, eventually those two tracks, I couldn't distinguish that there were two tracks. They melded into one, if you would, right at the horizon. And it gave me this picture in my mind of that's exactly what will happen to us someday. That as we're in life right now and we're on these parallel train tracks where there is suffering but there is joy and they run right next to each other, that someday in the brightness of Jesus coming, you know, when he comes for us and he takes us back to himself, in the brightness of that, those that joy and sorrow tracks will meld into one, and there will just be one track left, you will, and it will be joy. And that gave me so much hope to think that, yes, while this life has both, one day, only the joy will remain. And that encourages my soul to keep going, knowing that at one point, one day, Jesus will change all of that.
You know, one of the questions I'd written down is, you know, can we know with confidence how our faith life will respond when trouble comes? I think, you know, deep down we want to be able to say, yes, I'll choose joy when the hard stuff hits, or when that suffering track is more prominent than the other. Are there ways that we can be more confident in how we respond?
I think you only know how your faith is going to respond when you're in it. You can do the preparatory work, which is sending your roots deep into God's love, into his word, into who he is, into his character. Those are all things that you and I can do on a daily basis that prepare us for when the carpet gets pulled out from underneath us, when we get those bad news calls. But the only way to really know how strong or stable your faith is to have it tested. I mean, an untested faith is an unreliable faith. We can just hope or cross our fingers or, you know, hope that my faith is going to be okay when tough times come. But the message paraphrase of James 1:2 says that in hard times, our faith life is exposed. I mean, it's out there. It doesn't matter at that point what I say I believe. It doesn't matter what I've always thought I believed. It doesn't matter what I've taught or what I tell other people I believe. None of that matters, because when your faith life is actually exposed and you're in the most difficult, painful moments of your life, and it's just out there for everybody to see how you're going to respond, that's when you know whether your faith is as strong as you thought it was. And it always has bothered me to think that I can talk a good talk. I mean, I've been a Bible teacher for years, and so it's really easy for me to say all sorts of things about how strong my faith is. But the only way I really know how strong my faith is when it's exposed to the winds of adversity, to the losses of death, to the brokenness of a body that doesn't work well, to children who go a direction, to a divorce, to abuse. That's when you know where your faith really is. And our neighbors and our coworkers and our family members who are not believers, they're watching. They really are. And sometimes it's with a judgmental eye, but sometimes they're just as hungry as anybody else to know, okay, so you say you're a believer in Jesus Christ. You say that you have this strong faith in him. Show me how you act, how you respond when the dark days, when the dark times hit. And so we were very keenly aware on one level that there was a watching world, from neighbors to family to coworkers to our kids, our grandkids. There was a watching world that wanted to know how we were going to respond in the suicide of our child. And that's a lot of pressure, but it also is mostly exposed to me some holes in my faith, exposed some places where I wasn't as strong as I thought I was or as stable as I thought I was in my faith. And it's given me the opportunity to put my money where my mouth is. I mean, I want my grandkids to be able to look back on my life and say, you know what, my Grammy, she lost her son. She lost our Uncle Matthew. And it changed her. And she's not exactly the same person she used to be. But what I saw in my Grammy and my Papa were people who loved Jesus with their whole heart, who believed that he was in control of the details of their life. They believed with everything that they had that ultimately even this tragedy was going to be okay. And I saw my Grammy and my Papa praise Jesus and love him. That's what I want. And so knowing that the exposure of my faith life in tragedy had an opportunity to teach lessons far more profound than any Bible study I'd ever written, that my life is teaching my faith to those who watch. That is a motivation to me to make sure that my faith walk with Jesus is exactly as strong and stable and true as I say it is.
Kay, can you carry enough joy for another? I mean, it's one thing when we go through suffering individually, but if someone we love suffers, I mean, that's hard. You talked about, Rick spoke at NRB recently. He talked about, he dealt with depression and discouragement as well. You talk about it. So, do we need others to kind of carry the joy for us when we maybe don't have as much?
That's a really good question. And I think it's a yes and no, because there is certainly ways that we can support each other. We as parents, with Matthew and his severe depression, if I could have had enough joy for him, he would still be alive. So, in one sense, that's a no. You can't You cannot transfer your joy to someone else as neatly as that, but you can certainly support them. And all those come around people, lift their arms, do the practical daily kinds of needs that can make somebody's life a little bit easier. And yet joy is contagious at the same time. So it's both. You asked about that, you know, if you grew up in a home where people were more joyful, do you have a greater chance of being joyful? And I think probably the answer to that is yes, unless there is maybe mental illness. I think mental illness can interrupt some of the things that might naturally have occurred. But I also think we can be around people who are joyful and learn from them. One of the things I suggest in the full book is to get a joy mentor. You know, look at somebody, look at the people in your life and say, you know, that person, that guy right there, man, as far as I can see, he is living out. He's not one of those hyper-emotional people. He just has this settled assurance about God. He's got this confidence in God. And I see him, when his faith life is exposed to the light, I see him as somebody who is still praising God. I want to be like that. And so I think we can learn from other people, be around them, those who are modeling it. And I think children are probably the greatest little joy factories. It's just, you get around little kids and there's just an innocence and a playfulness and a life hasn't beaten them down, you know, too hard yet. And they're fabulous joy mentors. I think everybody should be intentional about being around small children when they can.
Yeah.
I wish we could just give it to each other, but in some ways it's something we have to develop personally in our relationship with God.
Yeah. Can we fully develop that if our brains aren't functioning properly? I know you've, you know, become passionate in speaking about mental illness. If mental illness is clouding our thinking, can we really choose joy?
I don't know the answer to that completely. My experience tells me that if you are living with depression or schizophrenia or bipolar, to the extent, you know, some of these severe mental illnesses, as I said, it interrupts because it happens in the brain and something isn't going. The brain can be sick. Your kidney can get sick, you know, your liver can get sick, your pancreas, you can have all sorts of things go wrong in the organs of your body, and your brain is an organ, and things can go wrong in your brain, and there can be physical illness or brain injuries, and it becomes extremely challenging when you're living with a severe mental illness to experience this kind of joy, and that's why I'm such a passionate advocate for people getting treatment, getting a proper diagnosis, getting on medication if it's helpful, and many times it is. And in fact, it can be a game changer for many people. Proper nutrition, making sure you're eating really good whole foods, not eating a lot of processed foods. Sleep and rest. There's so much that we can do that increases our physical health, which will hopefully help with our brain health too. But the people who I have tremendous admiration for are the Christians who live with deep depression. And so their faith never feels good. I mean, imagine what that was like if your faith never felt good because of a mental illness. And yet those people who continue to choose to follow Christ and to follow and believe even when it doesn't feel good, I have such admiration for those very courageous Christians who live with depression on a daily basis. My heart goes out to them, and I admire them. I admire the way that they really put feet to their faith.
Kay Warren's my guest today, co-founded Saddleback Church with her husband Rick some 30-plus years ago, a passionate Bible teacher and advocate for those living with HIV/AIDS and orphans and those with mental illness. And she's written a wonderful little devotional called Joy is a Choice You Can Make Today. It's a 30-day devotional off of her full book called Choose Joy. And we've got some copies to give away. Love to have you sign up for that. I hope you've been encouraged by the conversation today. We have more to come in just a minute, so stay with us. And the call to get your name in the drawing for the books, 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH.
I'm trading my sorrows. I'm trading my shame. I'm laying them down for the joy of the Lord.
Joy is a choice you can make today. That's the title of a wonderful little devotional book from Kay Warren. And I hope that you've picked up on the conversation today, that it is indeed a choice that you can make and choose today. We've got some copies to give away, and we've got a few minutes left with Kay, who is a Bible teacher and an advocate for those with HIV/AIDS and also for those with mental illness. And she and her husband, Rick, co-founded Saddleback Church some 30-plus years ago. She's written several books, including Choose Joy, Because Happiness Isn't Enough, and Say Yes to God. And we haven't, Kay, really talked about, you know, getting a clear vision of Jesus as a man of joy. We think of him as a man of suffering. You know, some of us, like you, you know, grew up in the pictures of Jesus in the church basement were pretty somber and sober. And I was thinking, you know, we maybe grew up with some suspicion of the word charismatic, and yet Jesus truly was the definition of a charismatic person, right? Say more about Jesus and joy.
Yeah, you know, that was a revolutionary thought to me, because as you said, I grew up in some conservative churches where there was the picture of Jesus on the wall of, you know, he's looking upwards to heaven and he's just got this look on his face, and it's like, you know, you better not laugh in the presence of that picture, because this Jesus doesn't laugh. But and art through the centuries has depicted Jesus in his most terrible suffering on the cross, which is completely appropriate, because it was his death, as I said, and resurrection that gives us the ability to even hope for joy in our lives. But if that's all we focus on, I think it short circuits or diminishes in some ways who he was as a person. And in his role, Jesus was a man of sorrow, but in his essence, he was joyful. And if you look at his interactions in the Gospels, you can tell by the things that he said. He said really funny things. It's just we don't understand Jewish humor. And when you think that he used humor by exaggeration, he said these crazy things like, you know, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter heaven. And we're like, huh? But to the people who heard him say it, it was hilarious. I mean, they're like rolling on the floor kind of stuff. He used a lot of humor in his words. His attitude. He was a guy that people invited to parties, and you know, we don't invite dull, boring people to parties. Jesus was, he had something about him that was winsome and attractive, and little kids liked him. You know, people would always bring their children up to him, and there's no record of them being afraid of him. They wanted to be next to him. So there was something about his demeanor that was charismatic, that was attractive, that was winsome, that drew people to him. And then he was funny in some of the things that he said. And then the ways that he treated people, the ways that he treated, you know, Peter, when, you know, Peter's walking on the water, and I always heard that story told as Peter's walking on the water, and, you know, then he looks down and he starts to sink, and the scripture records the words, you know, oh, Peter, ye of little faith, basically, didn't you know I would catch you? And I always heard it taught like, Peter, you of little faith, didn't you know I would catch you? Like he's mad at him and angry. And I really think that much more the tone of voice was more like this, Peter, oh, buddy, didn't you know I was going to catch you? I mean, the same way that we encourage our children when they're learning to walk, we don't put them down. We don't get mad at them when they fall. We are so pleased with the baby steps. Peter took this gigantic leap of faith by getting out of that boat and walking. There's no way that Jesus was mad at him for being human and losing his focus there for a second. So I think when we realize that Jesus was much more than this one-dimensional character, that he had humor and he had intimacy with his disciples, and they told jokes, and he was and kind in his approach. It makes it so much easier to go, okay, so that's the kind of Jesus, that's a model. That's who I want to be like. I want to be somebody who can carry the weight of the world, the sorrow of this broken world, the sorrow that of that parallel train track, and yet could also live with joy. That he provides a complete model for us as we try to figure out how we too can balance the sorrow side of the tracks of life along with the joyful. He knew he was going to die. He came to die, and he's still determined to have intimacy with people, to be lighthearted, to tell the jokes, to have fun, to be kind. If he could do that, then I can too.
We can easily get sort of caught on the phrase that, you know, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, and you know we've had too many years of not picturing Jesus and the Father as personifying joy, I guess.
Well, it's true, but even that verse, I love that verse because it sort of puts the bow on top of the package. He came to die, and it was for the joy that was set before him that he endured all that he endured. And the joy that was set before him was knowing that his actions were going to lead to millions and millions and millions of people coming to God through him, through his death and sacrifice, that he was going to be able to present to God millions of people and say, my sacrifice was worth it. And the joy of bringing me to God and saying, God, here she is. Here's my little sister Kay, and she's coming to you, and she's coming to you because of what I've been able to do, and she's put her faith in me. And that joy allowed him to endure the agony of the cross. And we can have that same sort of course, we're not Jesus and nothing like that, but that model of knowing that sometimes our sacrifice or the things that we do is going to lead to somebody else coming to know Jesus Christ, or somebody's going to know God better than they did because of the way we lived our lives. That's a joy that can be set before us as we endure some of the real things that come our way.
Okay, is there maybe a verse or passage that you kind of keep circling back to when you think about joy or realize that, you know, maybe there's a joy robber lurking?
Oh, goodness, there are so many of those little joy robbers hanging around, you know, from legalism, you know, living our lives by rules rather than by grace, worrying rather than trusting, demanding that people be perfect rather than just let people be different than ourselves. There's so many things that can rob our joy. But I think the passage of Scripture that has really come to mean a lot to me in not only the aftermath of Matthew's death, but just really focusing on who God is Romans 15:13. And I say it to myself almost every day, may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him, so that you may overflow with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. It's like we talked about joy and hope being inextricably linked together. The God of hope will fill us with joy and peace as we, here's the key, trust in him. And when we do, we can overflow with hope and joy by the power of the Holy Spirit.
Looking forward to a lot of overflow as we experience full confidence in who God is and choose joy. Joy is a choice you can make today. Thanks to Kay Warren, co-founder of Saddleback Church, Bible teacher, advocate for those with HIV and AIDS, orphan and vulnerable children, those with mental illness. She's authored several books, including Choose Joy, Because Happiness Isn't Enough, and Say Yes to God. And Joy is a Choice You Can Make Today, a wonderful little devotional. Kay, we're so honored to have you take some time with us today, and blessings to you in the days to come.
Thank you, Neil. Thank you for the opportunity.
If you missed part of today's program or would like to pass it on to a friend, encourage them, you can do so. Our interviews are all shareable, and they're posted online at myfaithradio.com, and then click on the Connecting Faith show page.